My name is Richard. I am a sexual being, and I have a story.
We are all sexual beings, and we all have a story.
You make me want to be a better man.
This is the Sexuality Stories Podcast with sexologist Dr. Jill McDevitt, where everyday people let you in on both the titillating salaciousness and mundane ordinariness that is human sexuality.
Hi, I'm Dr. Jill, and on this episode of Sexuality Stories, my guest Richard reminds us that strict gender roles and gender rules is still something that we're contending with today.
These were things that they did not see as normal, what you would call normal boy behavior, right?
His grave affront to socially acceptable gendered behavior, being a man who is best friends with a woman.
Says, wait, you said she. Your best friend is a woman? I'm like, yeah, best friend is a woman.
Male-female friendships, especially in a heterosexual context, are still seen as impossible by many, as the scene from When Harry Met Sally famously points out, because of the sex part. It gets in the way.
Men and women can't be friends because the sex part always gets in the way.
That's not true. I have a number of men friends and there is no sex involved.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
You only think you do.
But as Richard will share, it is possible, although it does come with its share of challenges. And I agree, because Richard is my BFF. Yes, I'm the woman Richard refers to in this story, and while our conversation here will include the occasional inside joke that comes out when two people who have been best friends for a long time talk...
Yo, beast.
Like all of our unique sexuality stories, I think you'll find Richard's story relatable, interesting, and human. Let's have a listen.
Beginning, as far as I can remember, was somewhere around the second grade, in which you lived 13 houses and a breakaway from where I did, and in Clifton Heights, Pennsylvania. And I mean, I just remember seeing kids my own age, and you know, I was playing with my neighbors sometimes, and then I just remember, you know, you living down the street, and then I know it had to have been you to come up to me, because I know I wouldn't have come up to anybody to that's just not my style. And we just, you know, at, what are you, 8 years old? Something like that, you know, and we just started hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was...
I was six, believe it or not. I was six, and you were seven, which is
right,
so young when you think...
Going into second grade, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
And since I have a summer birthday. Oh.
Yeah, so that sounds... And that would have been right about the right time when I moved full time in there, into my grandparents' house. So yeah, that would have been right about right. So yeah, pretty young.
Yeah.
That was in 1992.
Two.
And we are in 2018, so that is many years.
Many. And that's a special thing, right? So I feel like there's a few things here. One is the special nature of the fact that we've been friends at such a young age and maintain that through adolescence, through college, into adulthood, and also the gender dynamic.
Right. No.
Yeah.
Agreed. No, I absolutely agree with that. And, you know, as I'm sure this story will come to describe, is that, you know, it's that is something that you have to work on both of these things, right? You always have to work on your relationships, especially you know, long-term relationships, especially long-distance relationships as we have now. But you know, to be honest, when you're 7, 8, 10, 14, having, you know, your best friend of the opposite sex is very inconvenient due to societal norms, due to just, you know, just sometimes even different interests. Like, I'm just even going to use the simple interest that, you know, I like and played sports, and that was not your cup of tea. You know what I mean?
No.
So, you know, again, that could be societal norms as well, but you know. So those are things that we definitely had to work against the currents.
Mm-hmm. Can you think of a time, because I can think of a few, but this is your story, where that inconvenience came to light in the the adolescent years, where if I was a male and I was your best friend, we would have been able to do something but couldn't because I was a girl?
Well, I mean, it all starts with the sleepover, right? You know, first of all, I will go on the record, as I'm on the record right now, saying that I've actually never had a sleepover with a friend when I was in adolescence, boy or girl.
Mm-hmm.
But to see that you were having sleepovers with, you know, the Dawsons or our other friends, you know,
mm-hmm.
like as you're 9, 10, you know, and then, you know, as we get into the teenage years, you know, there's a lot of bonding that goes on with that, and I always felt, you know, kind of left out. I remember I always felt kind of left out with this, but I remember there was a specific occasion when your father was living in New Jersey and Julia was going to sleep over, and I really wanted to come because I really wanted to spend time with you and Julia and your father. And I couldn't because couldn't sleep over because I was a boy.
Mm-hmm.
That was not necessarily your family. That was more my family definitely giving me the crooked eye and saying, what's going on here? And how old were we at this point? Like, we were at least
13
15,
or 14.
14, 15, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think, you know, that is a specific time, but you know, it was all through those times. And, you know, I just learned to, I guess, live with the fact that that's going to be the case. And the fact that we couldn't have a sleepover until I got married and had an apartment.
You're right. I mean, because it is such a bonding thing. And I remember there being occasions, whether it be at my birthday party or just a summer night, and our whole group of friends was hanging out, and then it was like, okay, well, Richard's time to leave, and we all stay and do the girl sleepover thing. And I always thought that was so stupid, because I'm like, what do you honestly think is going to happen? Right? Now, of course, they think that there's going to be sexual whatevers. And I think this speaks to one of the biggest issues that comes up between male-female friendships, especially between two people who are heterosexual, as we both are,
mm-hmm.
is that there's the assumption that, right, the whole when Harry met Sally thing, the sex part is going to get in the way, right?
Right.
Tell me about that.
So what do you know? What do you want to know about that? I have a lot of theories on that. To be honest. So,
well, I'd love to hear them.
I'll start by just saying that it's very interesting considering our friendship was both pre-pubescent and post-pubescent,
mm-hmm.
such that, you know, we were all going through those raging hormone periods, you know, both of us at different times, but, you know, when we started becoming friends, you know, it was innocent, right? What do we, you know,
mm-hmm.
Little pecks on the cheek because, you know, we liked you and that's how we signified how we liked each other and stuff like that. And then,
mm-hmm.
you know, I didn't know, you know, one thing from another. And then, you know, as you go through puberty and you start getting, you know, the raging hormones and everything, I think that the sex stuff, the whatever it is, the, you know, if it's a attraction or something like that, I think that it is bound to get in the way in some manner, and it depends on how you actually handle that. You know, whether it's a I had a little crush on you for like a hot minute when you're like, you know, 15 and it's a summer day and you're sporting a tan or something like that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or, ooh, you look good in a certain outfit. Or, ooh, look, you're so mature and that's attractive to me. Things like that. It's all about how you're able to handle it. And I believe, you know, we were able to, you know, handle it pretty well, you know, throughout our multi-decades of friendship. To come to the fact that, you know, by the time we become, what, 17, you know, we're pretty much set in our ways, and it's like, you know, basically brother and sister, you know, type of love that we have for each other.
Right. And I think that we were always very mature people. I think we've been old forever. And so I think that was part of it, too. Like, we had a hyper-awareness about puberty and about sexual realities as it was happening. So when other people were, you know, adults saying like, oh, my mother is saying that Richard's such a nice boy, you know, and kind of and trying to get, you know, me interested in you in that way. And I had this, I think, an awareness of being like, okay, like friendship is a thing that exists. Yeah. And it is a love, and it is absolutely a love. And how old were we when we started doing the I love you thing? Because there was a maturity that needs to come with that. I feel like I've always loved you, you're my best friend, but it did take a while for that to feel.
Right, and I think, I mean, for something like that, to say I love you to somebody, you know, to... And here's the other thing, is like, I'm about to say something that I don't necessarily think is true because I'm me and I know what I'm saying, but if other people with other, you know, come from other frames of reference, so, you know, when I'm going to say, you know, saying I love you to somebody, you know, of the other gender, that is not your romantic partner, right, that takes a lot to actually do something to do that, because I think we're conditionally felt like we're conditioned to say I love you to people like your family and your romantic partner, but not to anybody, you know, not even to some of your friends, not even, you know, and if you're a man, especially not to your man, you know, man friends.
So you mentioned this idea of masculinity, right? And when you're not, what you are not supposed to do. How has that come up for you as you've gone through life as a masculine adult male? And, you know, you meet other men and, or you meet other women for that matter, and you talk about having a woman being your best friend. Whereas I feel like you said, there's a social role against that, especially from the men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Walk me through that.
Yeah, so, I mean, I have to admit that, you know, even when we were growing up, right, there were times that my family even thought it was odd that my best friend was a female. They've stated this before, and I just thought it was, okay, your best friend is a female. And then once, it was just like, they were kind of like taken aback by that. And they were very much, and they were definitely much more happy to see me when I, you know, when I was going out after school and say, playing street hockey with the guys around the corner on Gramercy, or going up to Clifton Field, or watching the Holy Cross CYO football games, things like that. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because that felt more normal to them. And so
versus playing really, house with me?
Right. Instead of playing house with you. Right? I told my grandparents what I was doing, because if I didn't and they found out I was lying about something, I got in trouble. So I was always very open and honest with them, and you know, they knew I played house. Sometimes we were playing house in front of my house. You know, it's rare, but, you know, sometimes we would. And that was, these were things that they did not see as normal, what you would call normal boy behavior, right? They never discouraged me from doing any of it. They just, like, as I said, gave me, like, the little crooked eye, like, okay, this is not normal. But I also did what, things that, what they thought were normal things. Like, I did play sports, and I enjoyed going to sporting events and stuff like that. So, you know, it is what, you know, so from an early age, you know, I got the crooked eye from my family. And, believe it or not, I still get the crooked eye from them sometimes to this day. I also get the crooked eye from basically anybody to this day that says, wait, you said she, your best friend is a woman? I'm like, yeah, best friend is a woman. So it still to this day in 2018 takes people, you know, aback a lot. But the one thing, you know, growing up that I've noticed is that, you know, I never really found myself in enjoying myself a great deal in larger groups of men. I don't know what it was, right? Sometimes we would have the same interests, but I just either I don't know if I didn't feel welcome, I don't know if I just didn't like what was going on. I never was able to put a finger on that, but I didn't start realizing that until I started looking at my group of friends as I got into college and started realizing, here, hey, there's a whole bunch of new people. Now let's take a look at the people that I'm around. Oh, I have my roommate and a bunch of women. That's what it was. It was my roommate, and we hung out with a bunch of women, and it was like, you know, it was like second nature to me almost. And I just found it normal. You know, that's where I felt comfortable.
Yeah. So, I mean, whether what came first, the chicken or the egg, as far as your relationship with me primed you to feel more, you know, comfortable with women, or we found each other because of that. What would you say, people or men, or women, for that matter, but men are missing out on when they talk about this friend zone nonsense, right? Where, you know, you're spending time with a woman, and she's telling you her feelings, and she's talking about what's going on with her, and she's leaning on you emotionally, and she wants to hang out with you, and then she doesn't want to have sex with you. Oh, I'm in the friend zone now, and that was a waste of time, because ultimately they wanted to have a sexual relationship.
Well,
what is the cost? What are they missing? As somebody who has developed a very close and intimate human connection with a woman that is a non-sexual thing,
I mean, for me, the biggest thing, and I guess, I'm taking a global look at this. So, I'm looking at, you know, our 20 plus year friendship as a whole. So for me, it's more about the different perspectives. And that is actually something that I frankly enjoy a lot of. So, like, that is something that I always seek out, the different perspective. You know, it's not, you know, it's when you're hanging out with a woman, I want to say, you know, everyone's different, right? But, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's not going to be the same, you know, it's not like hanging out with yourself. And a lot of times when you're hanging out with a bunch of guys, it's, you're picking out a bunch, and this is what I've noticed by some of these smaller friend groups that are male that I've had, is that you're hanging out with a bunch of people that are like you, right? These are people that are like you. And I found that when I'm hanging out with friend groups that are women, while I'm like them in certain ways, it is a very different, there's a very different, different perspective. And I really can't put my, finger on, I mean, besides, you know, gender, but, you know, there is a different feeling about it. Like, you're not just hanging out with a bunch of clones of yourself.
Interesting. I've not heard it be described that way before.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, the whole thing is, and I've spent a lot of time with a lot of different friends of, you know, that are female, and like it's different. It's comforting, right? It's different.
Mm-hmm. So we spend some time with the childhood and adolescence, right?
Yep.
We played house. We did radio shows.
Yeah, we did. We did school. We did school. We played school.
Oh, they did school. School. Yeah, school. We played school. And we came up with a lot of games, like our music games, for instance.
Okay. Yes.
We're nerds. There's no two ways about that. But it is different in adulthood.
Yes.
Talk about what in adulthood kind of really solidified, right? Because it went from being like kids on the block, playmate, you know, to, I think, a next level of, like, truly the intimate best friend relationship that we had, I would guess, I think, around the age of 21 or 22. Tell us that story.
So, all right. So, really where I think everything crystallized and how we became so close as we are today happened when you ended up spending a summer in Scranton. At that time I was married and still in college, living in my apartment with my wife. We both work full time and we're finishing up school. I believe, was this around 2003?
This was like 2006.
Oh my God. 2003 is when we graduated high school. So I'm thinking 2006, 2007. Right.
Yeah.
And I got married in 2006. I got married the May of 2006. Right. That's it then. So what ended up happening is that we ended up getting that, and this is how I equate it. We ended up getting that intimacy that we would have gotten if we had the sleepovers. And we had something called the Daily Report. The person that you were living with was worked long hours and, you know, would not be home. And my wife, I would go to school and to work, and then I would come home, and my wife worked nights. So my wife worked 3 p.m. to 11 p.m. And at that time, we had the whole, you know, talk free after 9 p.m. On your cell phone. So a lot of times to ensure that we didn't go over minutes on cell phones. We had to wait till 9 p.m., but then we would talk for 2-plus hours almost every night while you were either waiting for your significant other at the time to come home, or we were waiting for my wife to come home. And when we called it the Daily Report, it was literally a daily report. We would talk to each other every day unless one of us had something else that needed to be done. We talked about everything, about our relationships and the little idiosyncrasies about those relationships. What drove us nuts? What made us love the person that we were with? To the remote, the mundane. I mean, we literally talked about any possible topic. And that, I think, just thinking back on it, I think that kind of made up for all of those years where we could have been building what I would call that intimacy, you know, that special bond that you would have during sleepovers. We built that over, you know, it started over a summer of daily reports.
Right. I fully agree. P.S., you said, so what's going to end up happening, or what ended up happening,
and I
traveled. And
I knew I said it, too, and I was smiling as I said it, and I'm like, I cannot believe that I I said it on recording. Okay.
So we'll have to circle back to the whole inside joke thing that you develop when you're best friends with somebody for a million years. But yeah, so the Daily Report, I agree, was a really pivotal time because it, as you're an adult, most adults, right, you don't see the people that, you know, you're close with in a platonic way every day. And so you do the, hey, let's get together for coffee, and it's the, so what have you been up to? And you get the big, broad strokes, like, oh, you know, how's the new job going, or how's this, how's that? And the more frequently you see people, the more you can catch up on the little details. Like, oh, didn't your boss say that thing? What ended up happening with that, right? With the Daily Report and 3+ hours a day, it was, I mean, this the minutiae of the follow-up, because we were so unaware of what the other person was doing that it just became its own machine, and it just fed and fed. And this is what happens when you have a shitty boyfriend who abandons you all day long and all night long, is that you, right, you get to talk to your best friend. So some people might consider that suspect, right? Like, your boyfriend wasn't home and you're all 3 hours a night on the phone talking to this other guy. I still come back to, when people don't know the individuals, it sounds suspect. And I deal with a lot of clients and folks in my daily life as a sexologist who are saying, my partner, my girlfriend, my boyfriend, my husband, my wife, is friends with, or talking to, or spends a lot of time on the phone with, or spends a lot of time texting with, or wants to go visit, or, you know, go away for the weekend with this person who's having sex. And there's a lot of jealousy that comes up. Talk about what it's been like being married to a person that you met after we were already best friends.
Well, it ain't easy. I mean, I'll tell you that. So, you know, I've been with my wife, as I said, we got married in 2006, so we've been married 12 years. We've been together since 2003. So, you know, that's, what, 15 years we've been together. Yeah. And while that sounds like, you know, a lot, you also have to remember that I, you know, we've been best friends since 1992. So basically, mm-hmm. you know, if I were to maintain a friendship with you at any time, anybody that I met after, you know, at any point afterwards is always going to have, you know, I've always going to have met them after you, which, you know, for me is, to be honest, is difficult. My, you know, my wife, while, you know, sometimes she gives signals just by saying, okay, yeah, that's fine, right? So, you know, she completely understands. A lot of times she gives signals that say, like, meaning, like, why, you know, I don't, mainly, I don't understand. And I think that's what, for my relationship, I think that's what the issue is that she doesn't necessarily understand how a man and a woman can actually maintain a platonic friendship for so long. So, I mean, I've tried to, over the years, try to explain, you know, what having a friend like you actually means to me, and trying to use, you know, things like other people's platonic friendships, like her mother has a best friend that is, has she's seen for, you know, she's been best friends with for so long. The issue is that, you know, they are both of, you know, they're both female. So she doesn't necessarily understand, you know, the difference between the whole male-female thing. So it has been a very tight rope that I've had to walk. It has been very unfortunate. But, you know, I mean, I know, you know, that she, over, you know, in general, she trusts me. So I, you know, I think if she did have a bigger issue, I think, first of all, if she did have a bigger issue, I think I would have a bigger issue, and this would be we would be having a completely different conversation. But, you know, I think for us, it's just more of, you know, about communication and about, you know, saying, you know, this is who my friend is. My wife was around you and me at, you know, when we were 18, you know, and 19, mm-hmm. and when you were coming to my apartment. And she's come with me to things, at your place, at your old shop, in Westchester and things like that. So, you know, I think a lot of that has gone, you know, a long way, bringing her, mm-hmm. you know, trying to incorporate her, as much as she may want to resist. You know, I think that definitely helps as well. So, but
I am glad that she's come around to me over the years. It has gotten, it feels a lot easier.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's other issues there that, I mean, that could be a topic of an entirely different podcast, but we don't want to analyze my wife.
well, not when she's not here to defend herself, but.
Correct. So, yeah, but it, you know, coming out, and, you know, I can say we came out, we went and visited you, in San Diego, and we were at your house and everything. So I think, you know, incorporating, you know, if you are a person that does have maybe a spouse or a significant other that is spending time and you're worried, afraid, I don't know, you know, like having those anxious feelings, you know, I think being around the people that might
mm-hmm.
help, you know, that might help.
I think that's a great piece of advice, because I think that's part of it. It's not like I'm this mystery woman that your wife has to, you know, in the back of her mind suspect, like, is something going on or anything like that. Like, I've been to your house many times. Like, I've been around, right? The birthday parties, the amusement park, the things. We've done the things. And I think that's been the case with my boyfriends along the way, and now husband. So now that we're in a long-distance friendship, we do the Skype five-hour conversations. And so, you know, Ryan's in the house and can hear both ends of our conversation with all the inside jokes and the laughing and how we get really nerdy. And at one point I asked him, I said, do you ever feel jealous or like neglected? Like, I am, you know, on and on and on with, you know, with Rich, and, you know, you're out here by yourself on a Friday night. And he's like, I don't even want to have anything to do with you two. You're out there speaking your own language. I just walk in, I hear you two singing Billy Joel. I roll my eyes. I keep walking. Like, clearly this is a friendship. Like, I don't think anybody could analyze it and not see that we just happen to be two people who are friends.
Correct.
Yeah. So, with this own language, I think it's a really cute and sweet thing. When you're friends with somebody and close with somebody for long enough, you do start to develop your own kind of code, kind of style of communicating. When did you first start noticing the way that we talk to each other? Which, by the way, I am trying so hard not to do too much of in this call for the sake of not annoying the listeners. But tell me about when you noticed it.
I am trying my hardest as well. so I would have to say, I mean, it has to be sometime closer to the end of high school because of
let me guess what you're going to say. Working at the Vava?
Because the exact moment, like, I don't know if it was the exact moment, but I'm on the phone in my house in Clifton Heights, talking to you, and everyone knows who I'm talking to. They're like, that's Jill. You're on the phone with Jill. What does she want? Because they hear the change in cadence, vocabulary, and sentence structure. Because that's how you and I, our language is very big on things like cadence, things like how we structure the sentence that we're saying, but the mannerisms and the tone of the voice in which we sing, which is very unique in and of itself. Besides, we're not even talking about the difference in the inside jokey words where we, as you greeted me in this, in the introduction with a beast. And that goes mm-hmm. back to 2003 or 2002, actually.
Yeah.
So that, like, you know, doing things like that, that is, I don't talk to anybody. I don't call anybody else a beast. I think if I called anybody else a beast, they'd think I'm calling them something derogatory. So,
right.
So it's, you know, it has to be sometime in in high school. I mean, like, our language goes so far as that, if I were to say, call you three consecutive times and you didn't answer your phone and I leave a voicemail each time, it sounds exactly the same. Like if you were to go on vacation and I were to call you a couple of times and because I forgot you were on vacation, you can just go through and it'll sound like just a recording because I say the same, the same phrase over and over.
I am cracking up because I remember one time, because like, I never check my voicemail. And so one time I'm finally going through and deleting old voicemails and it was like, Beastly Beast, it is I. Delete. Beastly Beast, it is I. Delete. Beastly Beast, it is I. Oh, man. We have been best friends, as I think we've well established by now, long before I became a sexologist or got interested in gender and feminism and gender dynamics and sexuality and all of these things. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious about your thoughts on how that may have impacted kind of our normalizing this relationship, because I'm convinced that many men and women could be friends, but those social institutions kind of compelled them to go in a different, maybe in a different direction or grow apart. And we've maintained.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any part of you that attributes that to our analysis in a kind of sexological academic level, or is it a coincidence?
To be honest, I think it's more coincidence than maybe a, you know, a cause of, you know, one's study in this, you know, in gender and sex, you know, dynamics. The reasoning why I say that is mostly because, you know, where, like, we've had the relationship, and we've had the relationship, you know, going way back and, you know, into when, you know, we were all thinking and believing many different things, right? So, you know, we still had that, there was still something about it where we were together and friends. Where it crystallized was less, I think, about the understanding of gender roles, and stuff, but more of we got to finally be adults. And we can crystallize the relationship how we wanted to, you know, to strengthen it and move it forward. So, you know, it just so happened that it took, you know, it took those years until we became adults. I don't know. That's my opinion. What do you think about that?
Oh, I don't know. Now that I'm thinking about it, because I'm trying to think, was there ever some moment where I thought maybe we could have not been friends, but somehow my schooling changed it? I don't think it did. I think maybe it's made us analyze it more, and really acknowledge.
We don't need help analyzing anything. Trust me.
That's our favorite pastime. Let's analyze this to death. But yeah, no, I think you're right. I find personally as I've gotten older in life, there's been a lot of situations where I've just said, this is how things are quote unquote supposed to be. And what if I just don't do that? nothing happens. World keeps spinning. Like, what if I don't have children? Nothing. Nothing happened. Okay. You know, like, so, and I think that was part of it. I think with the sleepovers, right? Once we started having sleepovers and going away on vacation together every summer and staying in hotels together and all these things that are taboo and against the rules, I'm like, what if I go ahead and have that sleepover party with my best friend who's a male? Oh, world keeps spinning.
Oh my God. I just remember saying about sleeping in hotels. I just remember the fight that I got into with my family when we were putting out the idea of possibly going on senior week together.
The
group of the four of us. Oh my God, my family had a conniption. And it's not like I was even asking them to pay for it. I was like, I got money, I'm paying for it myself. Oh my God. And that's when, like, that was the first, like, actual argument I think I got over with them about our friendship, was that it was like a big, you know, and, you know, I was basically like, dude, I'm going to be fucking 18, right? Not gonna be telling me what to do. And once I pulled out the I'm going to be 18 card, they laid back a little bit on that. Unfortunately, we did not end up going to senior week.
We did not.
No, but like that was the, like that right there, right? That is the whole, you know, gender norms thing is like, oh my God, you know, we're all gonna be getting, you know, it's gonna be a hotel room for the four of us and what, two queen beds or whatever. Oh my God. What's, you know, it's like, no, you know, come on. Like, let's get real. So.
It is a sex panic. And my mother, so ever since, you know, my family's typically really open-minded about a lot of things. But I will say that my mom had a hard time when you and I started to do our summer travel, which started that very summer as soon as we graduated college. And we've been continuing ever since. And, especially when she learned out that your wife was not comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, that's disrespectful. And you're stepping into her space and types of, like, thoughts like that. And I did have, you know, some introspection about it. And I did try to do some deep thinking because I'm like, am I being an ass? How would I like it if this was my boyfriend or fiance or wherever you were at that point? And, you know, I'm trying to have these different, thoughts and feelings. And I also was like, you know what? No, because this is a friendship. And the only reason that anybody cares is because you're a man. And if you were a woman in a same-sex relationship with another woman, no one would say that. People are like, this is your best friend. But it's because you're a man. And so I think that was the only real pushback I had from my family was like, as an adult, when I heard, you know, that's not right. Why this poor woman, you're taking her husband or boyfriend or whatever on vacation in a hotel and da da da. And I'm like, I've been best friends with this guy for 20 years at this point, right? So, we've prevailed.
What was that, the second year after that? We, both of our now spouses went with us.
And so, then they were henceforth not invited.
Yeah, yeah. Hold, we realized that we actually have more fun on these things. Solo.
I mean, I do love my husband. He just walked in the door. Hello. I do love my husband, and I enjoy spending time with him.
Absolutely.
But... we never get to see each other. Now, especially that we're bi-coastal and you're in Pennsylvania and I'm in California, it's very important that we have time to just be.
Right, and that is exactly the point that, you know, I was making when we first started with this, is about how it is always important to need to nurture something like this, right? So, like, having the set out times where we are going to do something and do something new, right? To build new memories, to build upon what is already there. Because it's fun to get together and rehash, you know, the stories of what happened on the fourth grade zoo trip, but, it's also, you know, fun to then get excited about what we're going to see in the new city that we're going to explore. So, like, that is, and that doesn't have to be a gendered thing. That is just something that I think friends should do, and especially, you know, in our situation, we've been friends for so long, but we live so far away from each other. Like, we need, like, at least a full weekend, or maybe twice a year, right, to get together and, you know, build those memories. If you have, you know, if you have really good friends that are around the block, around the corner, or the next county over, you know, it's a little bit easier, but it's still important to get that time in with these people to make sure that, you know, you are still building those memories and still enjoying that friendship.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what's next? It's been, can we calculate the years? 26, 27? I don't know. It's been like 26, 27 years.
Stuff like that.
What's next? What's next? What's the next chapter of this story for you?
I mean, I don't, know, and it's not because I haven't thought about it. I've been doing, I have the type of personality that I'm a planner. I like to plan. I like to plan a lot of things. And then, you know, I plan, and then, because, I don't know why, but, you know, because it's me, I don't know, all of the plans end up falling through, and then my life isn't, you know, feels like my life is in disarray. So I've tried planning less, and just rolling with more punches. I don't necessarily know if I can project what's next, but this is what I would like to see is just really us, you know, keeping on the same track, right? Ensuring that, you know, because it's, as we both get older and as we both get busier, and, you know, I have three kids, and, you know, you are very busy with, you know, with work obligations and your new projects and everything. It's very, sometimes, a lot of times, difficult to find the time to have what we would call a daily report, right? Mm-hmm. Like have those, because we don't have a daily report anymore. There's no time to have a report, you know, every day, with the length.
It's at least weekly. You do have a weekly report.
Yes. Yes. We still call it a daily report, but, but like to be able to, because I work a lot. We both put in tons of hours, both at our jobs and, with other obligations, and, you know, sometimes it is very difficult. So, to find the mutual time. So what I've enjoyed lately is the fact that we've found little time in throughout the day, whether it's you're taking a walk or, you know, I'm driving, you know, to go tutor, from work or whatever. We've found little bits of time where we can spend 45 minutes on the phone just talking about nothing in particular, about the day, you know, about what I've seen, what I've witnessed, what is angering me at the moment, and you doing the same thing. And then being able to then spend most of the time when we get together not catching up on what we've been missing the last months, but then focusing on building those new memories. And, you know, I'm looking forward to knocking off all 50 states with you.
Okay.
As that is my goal, and then figuring out what the next new adventure is going to be.
Well, this year is Omaha, Nebraska.
Yes, and I don't know about you, and no, there's literally no offense to anyone who's listening who's living in Omaha, Nebraska, but I've been approached by at least four different people that I know that are living in the East Coast area who have once lived or grew up in Omaha, Nebraska, and have asked
really?
Me, seriously, why are you going there?
Like, why are you going on vacation to Omaha?
Right. They're like, why Omaha? Like, they just didn't understand. Like, I got more questions why Omaha than we did why Boise 2 years ago. Yeah. And I feel Boise is a little bit more random.
Yeah. Well, it's about not the destination, it's about being together. And I really like your point about that you kind of started with and kind of finished with is about prioritizing. Well, it's always a joy to talk to you. It's why I talk to you all the time. But thank you for sharing your story with me, because I did learn some things, and with my listeners, so they can gain a unique perspective on your individual story of being a man with a woman as a best friend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, anytime. I can't wait to hear it myself.
You've been listening to Sexuality Stories with sexologist Dr. Jill McDevitt, sponsored by you. Thank you so much for subscribing. Want to tell your story on a future episode? Contact Dr. Jill at jill@thesexologist.org.